Meet Natural Cycles, the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app that's 100% natural, hormone-free, and side-effect-free. Here's how it works. The app analyzes daily changes in your body temperature to find your fertile window, so you can plan or prevent pregnancy naturally. Natural Cycles is a clinically proven, non-hormonal birth control option that's 93% effective with typical use and 98% effective with perfect use. No synthetic hormones, just science. And if you're ready to start family planning, switching from preventing to planning a pregnancy is as easy as tapping a button. Plus, the Natural Cycles app makes tracking fertility easy. You can measure your temperature trends using an Oura Ring, Apple Watch, or our Bluetooth thermometer, which is free when you sign up for an annual subscription. Join over 4 million registered users who are taking control of their fertility naturally. Save 15% when you sign up with code RADIO15 at naturalcycles.com. That's RADIO15 for 15% off today.
Welcome into the Annie Fry Show. Thanks for being with us this afternoon. Happy Thursday. I don't know why. I don't know if it's the summertime for me or for you, but the days just seem like they run together. Does your schedule flow, Ryan, with your family's summer schedule? Because you have kids, obviously, that are in school and a wife that is a teacher. Does it get out of whack in the summer for
you? Yeah, it does, because you have so many things in the school year and with having a spouse who's a teacher that are every Wednesday we do this, every Thursday we do this, and that all kind of goes away in the summer, which is nice, but it also makes the days harder to discern.
Yeah. What about you, Brad? Is your wife teaches as well. Is it drastically different?
It is drastically different because she's home. And so she's doing a bunch of other things that she wouldn't otherwise be doing.
But you're not at home.
But I'm not at home. So my schedule personally doesn't change, but she's like ready for me to get home by the time because she hasn't had anybody to talk to all day.
But Molly woke up. She ends up in bed with us pretty much every morning, comes in sometime in the middle of the night. And she got in our bed at like 7 a.m. And then she woke up again at like 8:30. And she's like, Mommy, the sun's still up. I don't think my kids know what's going on. I think they're very confused by the current situation. So the news continues to roll in. The battle damage assessment, the BDA, is continuing to expose itself, much to the chagrin of, was it a Washington Post lady? Who was the CNN lady that Natasha somebody
it was
or whatever?
It was CNN, yeah. Well, it happened on
super
CNN.
Super reliable reporter for things anti-Trump. Like, if you're counting on her for that, you're going to get it. And so Pete Hegseth today decided to address what was what has happened. We're going to have a press conference, a White House press briefing here shortly. And I think it's important. What do you feel about Pete Hegseth and how he's handled this so far? Big fan?
Well, I think he's done fine. I don't think that his pressers have been particularly impressive, although he has pushed back where he needed to push back.
So I think we're going to I think we'll hear from the White House their assessment, not the Secretary of Defense or the Chairman of the Joint Chief of Staff, but we're going to hear the Trump administration's assessment of that damage. I also think that there are some deals, tariff deals around the corner, and also some, like, you know, world PC kind of things. There was a comment by Witkoff, and we'll play some of that for you a little bit later in the show as well, that's talking about expanding the Abraham Accords. And in his words, he said there are more people, there are more countries, entities that we look to bring in here, people, countries that you never would have expected to participate. We're looking to get them into the game. So this morning, Pete Hegseth, get a little spicy up there at the podium.
Because you, and I mean specifically you, the press, specifically you, the press corps, because you cheer against Trump so hard, it's like in your DNA and in your blood to cheer against Trump, because you want him not to be successful so bad, you have to cheer against the efficacy of these strikes. You have to hope maybe they weren't effective. Maybe the way the Trump administration has represented him isn't true. So let's take half-truths, spun information, leaked information, and then spin it. Spin it in every way we can to try to cause doubt and manipulate the public mind over whether or not our brave pilots were successful.
So Pete Hegseth really calling out the media immediately in that moment, saying, you know, listen, what you're advocating for in your blindness towards how much you hate, Donald Trump, look at what you are seeking to accomplish, what you're hoping fails. Just like think of the breadth of the consequences of your heart's desire and what it would mean for our men and women in uniform, what it would mean for the safety and security of this country, all because you were in a position to want to see Donald Trump fail. And it's pretty significant. Carolyn Leavitt has walked to the podium. This is happening live right now. Let's go to the White House on Fox News and see what she has to say.
President Trump, as commander-in-chief, the world is a much safer place. After decades in which past presidents coddled and enabled the world's leading state sponsor of terrorism, President Trump finally ended the immediate threat of a nuclear Iranian regime. Following President Trump's command, the most powerful military in the history of the world executed massive precision strikes on three of the Iranian regime's key nuclear facilities. The objective of Operation Midnight Hammer was to destroy the regime's nuclear enrichment capacity and stop the grave nuclear threat posed to the United States, Israel, and the rest of the free world. The mission, which will go down in the history books, was an overwhelming success. Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff Dan Raisin Kane covered the operation in great detail at their briefing this morning at the Pentagon, and I encourage every American to watch it. As President Trump has said repeatedly, the United States of America has the greatest, fiercest, and bravest armed forces ever to stride the face of this earth, and we couldn't be more grateful and proud of our nation's warriors. The Iranian regime was weeks away from being able to produce a nuclear weapon that would threaten the entire world before President Trump took this decisive action on Saturday night to obliterate their nuclear capabilities. The contrast in leadership could not be more clear. Barack Obama and Joe Biden sent pallets of cash, American taxpayer dollars, in a failed attempt to buy the Iranian regime's compliance with a weak and ineffective deal. President Trump sent a fleet of American warplanes to destroy Iran's ability to produce a nuclear weapon. The United States and the entire world are safer because of this president's decisiveness. Despite agenda-driven leaks by the fake news media aimed at undermining this incredible accomplishment achieved by President Trump and our brave fighter pilots, there is broad consensus emerging already that Iran's nuclear capabilities were indeed destroyed. The United States, Israel, the United Nations, and even Iran all agree they can no longer build a nuclear weapon. So what did the president, why did the president immediately turn to obliterating after the Iranian nuclear threat? Securing peace. Within 48 hours of the devastating strike, President Trump and his team brokered a historic ceasefire between Israel and Iran and officially ended the 12-day war. The Middle East is now shifting away from chaos and bloodshed and moving toward the beginning stages of a new era of peace and stability that President Trump has long called on them to achieve. This was unthinkable at this time last week, and this is what peace through strength looks like. Under President Trump, America will relentlessly advance our interests without being dragged into endless wars. His fearless leadership guarantees America is once again respected across the world. Just look at what he was able to accomplish at the NATO summit in the Netherlands. Many of you were there. Our allies agreed to invest 5% of their GDP annually in defense because President Trump demanded it. This will be the most significant reinforcement of NATO's collective defense in the history of the NATO alliance. And as a result, the United States of America will carry less of the burden, and our NATO allies will be stronger than ever before. As NATO Secretary General Rutte put it, for too long, one ally, the United States, and our taxpayers, I may add, carried too much of the burden of that commitment. And that changes today. President Trump made this change possible. We will produce trillions more for our common defense to make us stronger and fairer by equalizing spending between America and our allies. This is the Trump effect. This is what the president meant when he declared that America is back. Now, back here at home, Americans are paying much cheaper prices for gasoline this summer, as both the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times pointed out today. Here's how the Wall Street Journal put it. Hitting the road this summer won't bring as much of a big hit to your wallet. The national average for a gallon of regular gasoline is about 23 cents cheaper than this time last year. Analysts say plentiful supply is expected to keep prices down in the coming months. These are the cheapest gas prices at this point of the summer since 2021. And despite all the doom casting from liberal pundits, oil prices on Tuesday were lower than before the Israel-Iran conflict began. As President Trump continues to unleash American energy, our country will have even more efficient, reliable, and affordable energy to protect our national security and fuel our people. Later this afternoon, here at the White House, the president will host a One Big Beautiful event in the East Room to rally Republicans to get the One Big Beautiful bill across the finish line. At that event, he will be joined by everyday Americans from across the country who will massively benefit from the common sense policies and provisions within this bill. This is the largest tax cut for working and middle class Americans in history, and it's going to put more money into the pockets of hardworking Americans. Families will see an average increase in take-home pay of more than $10,000 per year. Americans earning between $30,000 and $80,000 per year will see a 15% tax cut. Overtime and tipped workers will save thousands of dollars annually. And our amazing seniors will receive historic financial relief by reducing the tax burden on their Social Security benefits. Simply put, this bill is going to unlock the golden age of America. And we look forward to continuing to work with the Senate and the House to see this bill on the president's desk for signature by Independence Day. Here in our new media seat today, we have Colin Anderson with the Washington Free Beacon, who will kick off our question and answer. Colin, go ahead.
Thank you, Caroline. We reported yesterday on a briefing from the Israeli defense minister in which he said the U.S. and Israel are working together to monitor any attempts from Iran to rebuild their nuclear program, and also that if Iran was to do so, the U.S. and Israel would work together to once again destroy that nuclear program. Is that aligned with the president's thinking?
Look, the president, as I said in those opening remarks, Colin, and thanks for being with us today, views the Middle East on its way to peace and prosperity. And the president used strength on Saturday night. The whole world saw that the United States is indeed the most lethal fighting force in the world with those precision strikes on Saturday evening. But the president wants peace. He always has. And right now we're on a diplomatic path with Iran. The president and his team, namely Special Envoy Witkoff, continue to be in communication with the Iranians, and especially our Gulf and Arab partners in the region, to come to an agreement with Iran. As for our alliance with the State of Israel and that friendship and that partnership between the United States and the State of Israel, I would argue it has never been stronger. And we see a new era in which perhaps some of these Gulf and Arab states can sign on to the Abraham Accords. That was one of the president's most signature accomplishments in his first term, and he'd like to see more of those countries sign on in this second term. And so we look forward to a sustaining a long and durable peace in the region, and the president wants to do that through a diplomatic solution. But as he proved on Saturday night, he's not afraid to use strength if we need to do it. Gabe.
Thanks, Caroline. The president mentioned in a Truth Social post that no enriched uranium was moved from Fort Doe. What about the other two sites, Isfahan and Natanz? How can the president be so sure that no uranium was moved?
Well, what I can assure you is that the United States and our intelligence agencies and Director Ratcliffe and the president's entire national security team were obviously watching these sites very closely in the weeks and the days leading up to the attack on Saturday, which I will add was one of the most secretive and successful operations in United States history. I think many of you in this room would agree with that, because none of you in this room knew about the strike on Saturday until it took place. So we were watching closely, and there was no indication to the United States that any of that enriched uranium was moved prior to the strike.
From any of the sites?
Correct.
And then one more thing, Caroline. Next week, the president mentioned that there'd be talks with Iran. He didn't mention any details, and Iran has not confirmed them. Can you share any details about any potential talks next week?
We don't have anything scheduled as of now, but I spoke to our Special Envoy Witkoff at length this morning, and I can assure all of you we continue to be in close communication with the Iranians and through our intermediaries as well, namely the Qataris, who have been an incredible ally giant partner throughout this entire effort. And as I said, this administration is always focused on diplomacy and peace, and we want to ensure we can get to a place where Iran agrees to a non-enrichment civil nuclear program. And there are many other requests that the United States has. Those details continue to really, they're just starting. Of course, the operation was just on Saturday night, but we are in touch. And if there is a meeting, we will let you know, as we always do. Brian.
Thank you, Caroline. There's two, one on trade. On the July deadlines coming up for the trade deals, is that deadline still hard and fast for the president, or is he now considering even coming to trade deals after that deadline, and where is he on that going forward?
I think the president has been asked this quite a few times by many of you in the media. I've heard him answer it at press conferences and at gaggles. He just spoke about it on Air Force One. The deadline is not critical. The president can simply provide these countries with a deal if they refuse to make us one by the deadline, and that means the president can pick a reciprocal tariff rate that he believes is advantageous for the United States and for the American worker, and he will continue to do that. But as for the deals, our United States Trade Ambassador, Jamison Greer, I speak to him frequently. He's working very hard, and he has had very good and productive discussions with many of our key trading partners.
And on the One Big Beautiful Bill, there's conversations on the Hill right now about the Medicaid cuts. I'm curious, if the final bill that the president's been talking about comes to him and it has Medicaid cuts in it, will he sign it, or would he rather just Congress do away with those cuts?
I think our friends in both the Senate and the House know exactly where the president stands on Medicaid. He wants to get rid of the waste, fraud, and abuse, and they are working to do that in the Senate right now. Jennifer.
Follow up on that, on the Big Beautiful Bill, is there enough time for Congress to work through the issues it needs to work through? I'm saying, does the president need to move back his deadline a little bit?
We expect that bill to be on the president's desk for signature by July 4th. I know that there was a ruling by the Senate parliamentarian this morning. Look, this is part of the process. This is part of the inner workings of the United States Senate. But the president is adamant about seeing this bill on his desk here at the White House by Independence Day.
And then on Israel, is there a date set for the prime minister to visit the White House yet? Is he coming in a couple weeks?
There isn't a date, but the prime minister has expressed interest in coming to the White House to meet with the president and come to Washington. The president is obviously in very open to that, but we don't have a date. When we do, we'll let you all know. Kate.
The president suggested he was open to sending more Patriot air defense missiles to Ukraine. Is that going to happen, and were there any other assurances that he made directly to Zelensky when they met?
I'll let the president speak on that. That was a private conversation between he and President Zelensky. But the meeting was a good meeting, and it was a meeting towards progress. And the president, as he said, repeatedly wants to see this war come to an end. But I'll let him speak on that specific.
Carolyn Leavitt speaking right now from the White House live coverage here on 97.1 FM Talk. We're going to take a quick break. You got to listen a little bit of everything. They talked about the Big Beautiful Bill. Ukraine, of course, just there at the end. I've got an amazing video to play for you a little bit later about an exchange with President Trump at that press conference yesterday at NATO. And when we return, huge news out of the Supreme Court. We're going to talk to Hans von Spakovsky coming up next. Folks, interested in the defunding of Planned Parenthood? Well, you're going to want to keep it right here. We're going to get to that in just a minute with Hans von Spakovsky, because the Supreme Court has made a ruling. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Meet Natural Cycles, the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app that's built around your body. The Natural Cycles app pinpoints your fertile days by tracking shifts in your temperature, so you can plan or prevent pregnancy naturally. It's easy to use. Simply take your temperature in the morning with our free Bluetooth thermometer included with our annual plan, or sync with your Oura Ring or Apple Watch. The app analyzes your data and tells you daily whether it's a fertile or non-fertile day. Natural Cycles is 93% effective with typical use and 98% effective with perfect use. But beyond effective birth control, the app helps you understand your body and cycle better than ever. And unlike some period tracking apps, Natural Cycles provides an advanced data protection program to keep your information private and secure. Ready to go hormone-free? Sign up for the Natural Cycles annual plan and get a free Bluetooth thermometer, plus 15% off your subscription with the code RADIO15 at naturalcycles.com.
And this first case we're going to unpack here is a victory for South Carolina and other red states that have sought to block funding going to Planned Parenthood and abortion providers. In this case, on a 6-3 ruling, we're learning that Justice Neil Gorsuch, who wrote this opinion on behalf of the court, is saying that there is not a private right to bring forward a lawsuit if a state does not include something like a Planned Parenthood as a provider that it is going to offer those funds for. So it is a very technical case, but ultimately this is a bit of a victory once again for states that are looking to block funding going to abortion providers.
We the people of the United States.
More perfect.
Third form of our perfect union.
Heritage legal expert Hans von Spakovsky.
Well, that was a Newsmax report that you were just listening to. And here from Fox News, the Supreme Court ruled Thursday that South Carolina has the power to block Medicaid funding for Planned Parenthood clinics in a technical interpretation over healthcare choices that has emerged as a larger political fight over abortion access. Hans von Spakovsky, what a pleasure to be able to have a conversation with you today as the Supreme Court is starting to turn out some of these rulings. This is the one that struck my interest the most. Welcome back to the show. What can you tell us about this ruling?
Well, this was one of five decisions the Supreme Court released today. And in essence, you know, the Medicaid program, I'm sure if folks know, I mean, this is the health insurance for poor people that we have in this country. It's a joint program of the federal government and the states. The feds contribute a majority of the funds, but states also put money in, and it's the states that actually administer the Medicaid funding to the poor residents in their states. And one of the things that's a provision in the Medicaid program is that you can only, if you're a Medicaid recipient, Medicaid beneficiary, you can only get medical care from what's called a qualified provider. And it's the state that determines who is a qualified provider in their state, which makes a lot of sense because, Anna, you and I both know who's in charge, for example, of issuing medical licenses to practice in states. Who is it that governs the way hospitals and others conduct themselves? It's state government. It's mm-hmm. not the federal government. And in this case, South Carolina said, we don't consider Planned Parenthood to be a qualified provider. Therefore, you won't be eligible for Medicaid funding if you go and get services from them. And Planned Parenthood and a Medicaid recipient sued the state, saying, well, you can't do that. You can't tell us we're not a qualified provider. And what the Supreme Court said today is there's no private right of action. In other words, neither Planned Parenthood nor a Medicaid beneficiary can sue claiming, well, we ought to be considered qualified providers. Now, the amount of money South Carolina was annually giving to Planned Parenthood was a tiny amount. But this opens the door for other states to do the same thing. And the amount that, when you total up the amount Planned Parenthood gets through Medicaid from other states, I think it's over $800 million a year.
Hans, you know, the Hyde Amendment comes to mind. I thought that there was right. I thought that there was a promise that no taxpayer dollars would ever go to fund abortion. I don't understand why a business that's main profiteering is based on their abortive services, why they could ever collect a single taxpayer dollar. But I do want to drill in a little bit more about how you said this opens up other states for the possibility to make such a decision within their own. The Attorney General, Andrew Bailey, we had him on the show yesterday, tweeted this out just a few minutes ago. Supreme Court has affirmed that Missouri tax dollars do not have to fund the unlawful and repugnant actions of Planned Parenthood. The end is in sight for Planned Parenthood at PPFA. So is the onus now on each individual state to follow up and say, South Carolina, we've got some precedent there. Now those pro-life states can take action if their statewide officials say so?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. The states, basically, this gives a green light to states to do it. Now, you and I know what's going to happen. Red states will cut off funding to Planned Parenthood, but places like California and New York will not. And by the way, the answer to your earlier question is the way Planned Parenthood got around the Hyde Amendment and the ban on federal money being used for abortion is that they put Planned Parenthood claims that they provide other services, you know, medical exams, breast cancer, mammograms, things like that, besides abortion. That's a tiny percentage of what they do. Their money overwhelmingly comes from abortion, but that's what they use to try to get around the Hyde Amendment.
Yeah, it's very disappointing. I think if people could follow the money more, there are a lot of people, you know, this is just a political approach to this issue, but there are a lot of people who don't love abortion but would still consider themselves to be pro-choice, but wouldn't want to know or wouldn't want their tax dollars to truly be going to fund it for people. And I think that this is a step in exposing that. I know that there are a whole slate of big cases that we potentially will get the ruling on, I guess, tomorrow. Is tomorrow the last possible day? Could it go into next week?
Well, right now, tomorrow is the last day that the Supreme Court has scheduled to release their opinions. There are five decisions left. I suspect we'll get all five tomorrow, but, you know, they could decide to schedule another day last week and not release them all tomorrow.
So are there any other of the Supreme Court rulings today that you found of particular interest that we should be paying attention to, or which ones you're anticipating to be released tomorrow?
You know, there are other important decisions today, but most of them had to do with procedural issues on criminal cases and things like that. What we're still waiting for, some very important cases, is one of them is called Free Speech Coalition v. Paxton. That's the case where Texas imposed a verification rule on pornography websites, saying you have to verify before you let somebody into your website that the person is an adult. And all these pornographers got together and formed an organization they called the Free Speech Coalition. Doesn't that sound innocuous mm-hmm. and really nice? Mm-hmm. And said that, oh, no, this violates our First Amendment rights, forcing us to make sure that kids aren't viewing our pornography sites. That's a really important case. Of course, we're also waiting for the Mahmoud versus Taylor case. This is one out of Montgomery County, Maryland, in which the local school board, which is this woke far-left school board, said that to parents, you cannot opt your kids out of the sex education we're doing. And by sex education, I mean DEI propaganda.
Indoctrination.
Indoctrination, yeah. Basically. No, you can't. You can't wave your kids out of this. And so all these parents got together to sue. And listen, it was a real coalition. It was parents of Jewish kids, Muslim kids, Christian kids, all saying you cannot force us to have our kids educated with this kind of propaganda. So we're waiting on that case. And finally, we are waiting to hear on the birthright citizenship case, not the substantive issue, as I think I've said before. But the issue that was up before the court on an emergency appeal were nationwide injunctions. And frankly, we're all hoping the Supreme Court comes out with a decision in which they set out strict rules trying to cut down on the nationwide injunctions being issued, not just in this case, but in general.
Well, we'll be paying very close attention to it. Hans, we always appreciate your thoughts and expertise on these issues. A good one out of South Carolina, and hope it gets some legs across the country. Thanks for the details today. We'll be looking forward to tomorrow as well.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
All right. Bye-bye, Hans. Thank you so much. Let's take a quick break. The YouTube live chat poll for today, first time mentioning it. How much destruction did the airstrikes cause to Iran's nuclear facilities? Setback for months, setback for years, or obliterated? We'll see where the Trump vote is today.
I don't have a prediction today.
I have a prediction. We'll get to it in a little bit. Let's take it. Let's discuss it real quick when we come back. The YouTube live chat poll, youtube.com/@AnnieFry. And a reminder, you can stream us on the Audacy app anywhere you go, anytime. AUDACY, find 97.1 FM Talk. We'll be back with the discussion on the destruction of the airstrikes. How bad was it? Don't go away.
Meet Natural Cycles, the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app that's built around your body. The Natural Cycles app pinpoints your fertile days by tracking shifts in your temperature so you can plan or prevent pregnancy naturally. It's easy to use. Simply take your temperature in the morning with our free Bluetooth thermometer included with our annual plan, or sync with your Oura Ring or Apple Watch. The app analyzes your data and tells you daily whether it's a fertile or non-fertile day. Natural Cycles is 93% effective with typical use and 98% effective with perfect use. But beyond effective birth control, the app helps you understand your body and cycle better than ever. And unlike some period tracking apps, Natural Cycles provides an advanced data protection program to keep your information private and secure. Ready to go hormone-free? Sign up for the Natural Cycles annual plan and get a free Bluetooth thermometer, plus 15% off your subscription with the code RADIO15 at naturalcycles.com.
Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. So the poll, as Ryan just mentioned, how much destruction did the airstrikes cause to Iran's nuclear facility? I was playing that clip from Pete Hegseth a little bit earlier where he was admonishing, in pretty much, no punches pulled, the media for wanting to choose the opposite of violence. They, it wasn't that bad. Leaking this report, it's not that it's gotten under the skin of the administration in a way that hasn't been happening for a decade now. I mean, we're in 2025, midway through 2025. The Republican primary started this time 10 years ago when Donald Trump started. You know, we just passed a week or two ago the anniversary of Donald Trump coming down the escalator and declaring his presidency. So the lies and deception that have been peddled and coordinated by an angry, agenda-driven media, we're really used to this right now. But, and it's the greatest irony of ironies, the Republicans are in a position right now to stand at the podium where all the press has to sit around and raise their hand and wait to be called upon, because somehow or another this country landed in a place where a majority of people said, we're done with that. We've heard the stories. We've seen what you tried to do. We don't believe you anymore. So Pete Hegseth pushing back pretty significantly on the leaks that came out. So now we have a clouded understanding, at least that's the intent of the leakers, a clouded understanding of, did we actually do what we sent those bombers from Missouri to do? Did we, as President Trump said that night and has said repeatedly, did we obliterate Iran's nuclear facilities, their nuclear capacity? That's the poll. How much destruction did the airstrikes cause to Iran's nuclear facilities? What do you think, Brad?
I'm voting obliterated. I don't know how you can drop that much ordnance that was designed. What did they say? They planned for this attack for 15 years. They designed this ordnance to attack this facility. I don't know how you can drop, 12 of them on top of the, not necessarily this specific facility, but you can drop it onto this facility. It was designed to destroy it and then not do it. This is obliterated. And whenever I listen to the media talk about initial reports are that it didn't do it, they're too giddy to before that. But yeah, I think this thing is gone. It's obliterated. They'll have to build a new one.
Setback for months, setback for years, or obliterated?
Setback for years, simply because Iran, unless there is a regime change, they never stop. They just keep pushing for this thing. So it could be many years, because I do believe the reports that they obliterated it. So I'm not going to vote for that just because Iran is very persistent. They'll always come back and they'll always try to make a nuke.
I really dropped the ball. I should have had a fourth option that said set back until the next Democrat administration.
That would have been my choice.
because it really depends. You know, set back for years. You're just saying they'll hold their breath until they think they can get away with it again,
yes,
which is what they've been doing. And, you know, so my vote here is set back for years. And I would put maybe even years, dot, 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 like the ellipsis after years is how long is America willing to sit around and screw around and hand the keys over to the socialists of this country? The people who, this is the thing that drives me the craziest about, you know, people like the New York City mayor. And I'm back and forth on wanting to talk about that New York City mayor race. A socialist is running on the Democrat side of the aisle for that mayor position. Eric Adams, who has run as a Republican before, was mayor as a Democrat, got pursued by the agenda driven law and order wing of the Democrat Party, got off the hook by Donald Trump, became an independent, is running again for re-election for mayor. I mean, this guy has been all over the place, but I kind of watching him and listening to what it is that he's saying, I feel like he's been pretty consistent, but the labels have changed as he's gone. I don't necessarily feel like he himself is a chameleon in what he represents. He was a police officer. He's always kind of kept that connection. You've got Eric Adams, who was in law enforcement, against this psychopathic socialist who has commented very publicly about wanting to defund the NYPD, let the criminals go, and essentially turn New York City into what a socialist dream might be. This is where I get super frustrated, folks. The idea of socialism in socialism, you want to get in on this?
Socialism?
Thank you. That's all you got for me?
Oh, I'm your pronunciation
smack
expert.
Smack me around a little
bit? No. I'm just trying to help here, of course.
All right. Socialism in America is such a hobby. It's an annoying hobby. It's the hobby that the people who are around you, who think more probably with their heart than their head, casually, can dabble in socialism because it sounds really nice. Socialism sounds comfy and cozy. The realistic approach to socialism, though, you understand quickly how much of the opposite that actually is. Socialism, this idea that everybody should have what they need. Everybody should have, who should not have what they need? How could you be a heartless person and take away someone's right to have free housing and health care and all of these things? Well, in America, we say you got to work for it. You've got to produce so you can take, because you cannot truly provide everything for everybody. And who gets to determine what the need actually is? And if you want to take away, 50 Cent is smacking this mayoral candidate around on X, which I find incredibly interesting. The tax for anyone over $1 million is a straight flat 2%. You're a rich guy or girl tax. That's good. And the mayor candidate's position is they don't need it. They have what they need. Folks, now $1 million in New York City would feel pretty good to me, but $1 million in New York City is a lot different than $1 million in Afton. That's a whole different story. And why does this mayor candidate get to choose when somebody has made enough money? Why put that power on that person? We are so successful, we are so prosperous in this country that we get to dabble in the idea of socialism because it sounds nice and warm and fuzzy. It's like puppies and sunshine for everybody. Who doesn't like puppies and sunshine? It's not realistic. It doesn't work. We become prosperous. People are like, everybody should be this prosperous. And they don't realize how we got to be that prosperous. New York City? I don't know. A socialist up against a moderate used-to-be Democrat from New York City? I think we've seen this one. Maybe not on the scale of just New York City voters, but I cannot wait to see how it turns out. Weekends America, when we come back, we keep talking about this, and it's never put upon Ryan, but today's subject is?
If you're cheap, this is how you avoid. If you,
if one was.
The
were.
Collective you is cheap. This is how you would go about making sure that you don't look it. It's trying to move you toward frugality. So that your public reputation doesn't get ruined.
I have never heard someone push so hard to determine the difference between being frugal and cheap, just for the public to know.
It's not for me.
No, it's for you. We'll be right back.
Wiggins! Oh! Wiggins!
I'm starting to sense like a battle royale between Ethan's local news segment intro and the music that Ethan gets to pick for Wiggins America.
Yeah, you changed the music. I thought you were going to do Careless Whisper.
I was.
That's an oldie but a goodie on the Wiggins America intro.
But you were so whiny when you walked by. You're like, you're doing that one for me again.
I know.
I was like, okay.
I get
fine,
that my public.
I'll be a good guy.
My public persona is highly sexualized, and I understand that. But I'm just
for
trying to, as I get a little bit older, like I'm still in my prime, obviously, but as I move a little bit past it, I want to not be viewed as just meat anymore. I have
like a hot dog?
I have a brain.
Is it even meat?
And I want people to understand that.
If Ryan were meat, what kind of meat would he be? Don't answer that. I'm saving that for Ask Me Anything on Friday.
Oh, God.
Now you have time to think about
it. That's dangerous.
Go on.
They're all the choices are like sirloin, prime rib, don't do hot dog.
I already said it.
That's not one of them.
Pork butt.
These are ways to avoid being cheap.
Cow tongue.
So everybody should be frugal.
Rocky Mountain oysters.
But Rocky Mountain oysters, no. Wait, actually, that'd be all right, I guess.
He didn't have balls. He used balls. Yeah.
Squirrel.
Go on.
These are ways to avoid looking cheap.
Is anybody in here identify themselves as cheap?
Absolutely not.
No.
Absolutely
does anybody
not.
In here identify anybody else in here as cheap?
Yeah.
Yes.
Frugal.
Brad.
Yeah, thank you. It's Brad. But he's frugal.
I wish I were cheap.
This segment...
I would be what you might call loose.
Not again.
Throwback to Ethan, who called me loose earlier, not understanding the meaning.
This segment is actually for my wife.
very poor timing.
Yeah.
Or choice.
Okay, so the first one is complaining about the price of everything. There's no better way to proclaim. Again, this is perception.
Can I ask you real quick, is there a date on this article? Is it fresh?
2009.
Well,
it's from the earlier part of this year.
Got it in the
discount. So I mean, it's inflation current.
Yeah,
because I feel like that's the new how's the weather.
Yeah, that's true. But it would also indicate that you're cheap if you are always complaining about the price of everything.
Yeah,
it doesn't mean you can't ever. It just means if it's a common theme for you. The next one is not paying your fair share when you go out with friends. Do you conveniently forget to have cash every time you go out with friends?
Are you ever around people who do that?
Yes.
Are you the person?
No.
Are you always around someone who does that?
I am always around somebody that
like,
does that.
Like it's a theme.
It is a theme. Here's the problem, though. The person is actually very wealthy, and I don't think they're doing it on purpose. They just don't. They're like, who cares? It's $30.
Have you ever been to a restaurant?
To them, it's nothing.
Have you ever been to a restaurant where everybody orders, maybe you're with a group of couples, and they're like, maybe it's four couples, and they're like, let's just split it four ways. Have you ever been to that?
Yes.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I don't know why you do it.
I feel uncomfortable doing that.
Feels stupid.
Yeah, why not just order separately? I don't know why.
Well, a lot of nicer restaurants won't split a ticket four ways.
Still?
Oh, yeah.
Today's day and age?
Yeah, they make more money that way.
What do you think about it? You have thoughts?
I think that you better be very, very comfortable understanding that you are all in the same economic position. Because there are people who are going to order... We order water all the time with our family, but with six people in our family, it'll add literally $30 to the bill if everybody gets a drink. So we're like, kids, you're drinking water. You can go home and have something there if you want. And sometimes Jared and I get soda, like a Diet Coke or something, but we're like, we're paying the bill. So we can have soda and you're not going to complain about it. And then you won't eat dinner. If you're with people who are not in the same economic position, you can't do that. You just can't do that. It pushes an issue. It makes a part of the conversation something that shouldn't have to be discussed.
The next one is not valuing your own time in pursuit of deals. Being cheap and saving money,
for sure,
but it can cost you time, as in time spent rummaging through mounds of you know, sale items and
this
stuff like that.
This is for couponers. Now,
yes.
if you have a bunch of time and you don't have a lot of money, knock yourself out. If you're not giving up something else because you're spending your time here, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Or if it's a hobby and you just enjoy it, then that time is something of value. But I've watched people go way out of their way, and I'm like, how much did you save on that? And they're like, $3.83. And I'm like,
What a scoop.
It's almost...
This is a process.
That's almost a take a guess.
This is a process, though, because it's something that you do more and more as you get older. Or you say, I should say less and less as you get older. How about hoarding? That wouldn't seem to make sense. But if you can't bear to part with broken items or things that you might find useful someday, you might be cheap.
Big day in the Fry House next week. Dumpster arrival day.
Hey-o.
Anti-hoarding.
How long do you have the dumpster?
A little over a week. No, you can't use it.
I wasn't going to ask. I was just going to sneak over there.
Wait. Like, I wasn't going to ask. I was just going to do it.
You're talking about a dumpster that's like the size of a driveway, like one of those dumpsters?
Sure hope so. Yeah.
How much stuff do you have?
Soon, less.
Less.
Like, I told my kids, hey.
Annie's a hoarder.
Dumps. No, I'm not. I have six kids and we go through stuff. Furniture. Like, we don't really buy nice things because I don't want to be yelling at my kids all the time. Like, stay off the furniture. They're like, this is my house.
How many kids do you have?
All of them. Four.
Oh, you said six.
No. Six people.
There you go.
Four kids. Those other two. Two dogs.
We keep them in the shed.
Yeah. We upgraded our couches upstairs. And so then we take the upstairs couches and put them downstairs and let the kids do whatever down there on them. And then we take the couches that were downstairs, get them out of the house. Kind of need a dumpster for that. And it helps purge other things.
That's fair.
She's not a hoarder, but the people who go through her dumpster, those people are hoarders.
It's you. You're the person going into my dumpster.
I just need to get rid of some electronics.
The raccoon.
Representative Eric Burleson next. Don't go away.